Hold on to your butts, everyone. It's Big News Wednesday. Yes, it is in fact Big News Wednesday, which means you not only get me, John Adrola, but also the host of the watch list, J.R. Jackson. J.R., welcome.
Woo. Sorry about that, you guys. I'm just at home hanging out, having fun.
Okay.
Relaxing, well, a little bit, kicking back.
That is what it sounds like. So it's good to know that we're getting the little that is left of JR today on the show. His voice is shot, apparently. Anyway, we're glad to have you here on Big News Wednesdays. Do your best, bud.
John, this is what gets me through. I have some newness. I got some newness for you.
You got some newness for
me? Mamba Magic Sticks.
Mamba Sticks?
Yeah, bro. I grew up on the Mamba little cubes.
They're good.
Multiple with cherry apple, pineapple orange, mango strawberry, and watermelon raspberry. It's two flavors.
Okay, every one of those sounds good. They're not sponsoring us, by the way. They don't know we exist, but that does sound good. Mamba is good. It is it's a very unique texture for a candy. There's nothing quite like that in terms of the amount of pressure. I like it. It's a challenge. I don't know what I'm talking about. Anyway, thank you everyone for being here. This is a program. This is the first episode that you are listening to. You've already clicked away. But for those of you who might not have been close to a remote or your computer, we're a show that talks about the politics and candy, particularly on Wednesdays. Anyway, thank you for being here, JR, and thank you for watching. We've got a lot that we're going to be talking about.
Absolutely.
Including gun control, sort of, and the destruction of the separation of church and state. A tweet that literally made my eyes just shoot open when I saw it. We're going to be starting off the show with that and a whole bunch more besides. We got some fun. We got some absolute racists. We got bad cops. We got everything. So everyone is going to need to buckle up for that. And once you're securely buckled, please hit the like button so that people know we're live. It'll help send out notifications and all that. Before we jump into our actual prepared news, though, I did want to mention two things. One, we were talking about right before we went live. Senator Kevin Cramer, Republican senator of North Dakota, apparently injured his hand while doing yard work, and he injured it so badly that he might have to have amputations of fingers. And I simultaneously do not want any more details, and I kind of really want to know details. What happened in that yard, JR? That sounds horrifying.
I'm gonna start looking this up because I have to know.
I don't think there's anything like, and I went to the Hill, and that's definitive. Okay, if there were more details, they'd have it. But anyway, I don't see anything more. So that is news. But more importantly than a senator being maimed by his, I'm gonna say tree trimmer, maybe. Anyway, Kraft Macaroni and Cheese is changing its name and some other stuff. There's a whole bunch of stuff about the color and the. By the way, they talk in this article, this news release about it, about how the most recognizable thing about the box is the noodle smile. It's like a noodle that forms a smiling mouth.
Yeah.
And it says, it now looks, quote, even more delicious and dripping with creamy, cheesy goodness. And I'm going to need you to just back off, PR person, because you're getting gross. Stop it right now. But more importantly, they're changing the name from Kraft Macaroni and Cheese to Kraft Mac and Cheese, which a lot of people, they say it's how people refer to it anyway. A lot of people find it to be more convenient. I will say this is Italian erasure. Put some respect on the word macaroni, okay? It's not just Mac. Well, why call it cheese? Mac and cha, whatever. We're just shortening everything. Kraft, Kramac and cha. We don't have time to say anything. We got to get mac and cheese into our mouths. Anyway,
John, this is one of those moments when you have to realize you're becoming an old person, because I have these rants in my head, and right when they're transferring to come out as a thought process to get clowned at by anyone that's under 35 years old, I have to chill out.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. And by the way, I still like mac and cheese. It's among the foods that I eat. It's really gross when you think about it. We're just going to take pasta and coat literally every surface with cheese. It's bizarre. Anyway, with that said. No, like Sophie's like, you got to get to the serious stuff. But no, we're not going to. We're going to do this first tweet and it's going to be ridiculous. So you know what? Let's prep. Let's launch into this. I was on Twitter, as you sometimes are, and I came across something that made me stop for a second. I don't know if JR's already seen this, so I'm excited to read it to him. It comes from Steve King, former congressman, who tweeted, I spent Juneteenth all day in the hot sun hoeing and pulling weeds and thinking about what it would have been like to have been a slave. At the end of the day, I thought about what it would be like to be an aborted baby. I got to see the sunrise and the sunset. And as I was reading that, it just kept getting crazier inside of one paragraph. And I thought, well, surely this is not a real tweet, even for Steve King, even in these trying times. That couldn't be real, but no, it checks out. Every bit of that was real and intentional. And a human with a technically functioning brain typed it out, JR, and sent it. He spent a day hoeing and weeding and thinking about what it would have been like to be a slave. And then he pondered what it would be like to be an aborted baby.
Let's start with the hoeing and the weeding. Because apparently Steve King, who's a rabid racist, reasons why his name is Steve King and no longer Representative Steve King, it's because he's a rabid racist. Remember cantaloupe calves? Calves the size of cantaloupes because they're hauling pounds of cocaine and marijuana through the desert, talking about folks that are trying to find life. Anyway, that's Steve King. So first off, Steve King never thought about what enslaved people went through until he was hoeing and pulling weeds, because that's what enslaved people went through. They just hoed the land and then they pulled weeds and that was it. They didn't get sold into slavery. They didn't get families split up. They didn't have their children maimed and separated from them. They didn't have body parts of theirs cut off and destroyed. They weren't hung. They weren't ripped in half. They weren't sicked and attacked by animals. No, none of those things happened to people. Maybe if Steve King went through those things, maybe if he went through what they called breaking people, maybe if he went through those type of things, he would talk about how he understood what enslaved people went through in America. But again, this is maybe he needs a couple lessons in CRT. Maybe he needs to actually learn about what happened within our history, which, by the way, CRT is not that. I'm just saying that because that's what they're saying it is. The actual history of what happened in our country is not CRT. It's just history. But we're trying to avoid seeing that. And we have ignorant people like Steve King say this.
Yeah. And I'm glad that you pointed out some of his past controversies, including, by the way, talking about how we should use cattle prods at the border because migrants are like cattle, basically. And we should shock them, electroshock them, which was like a joke in the Coneheads movie back in the 90s. And then like 10 years later, it's just something a Republican congressman says. And JR, he finally was forced out. How many things did he have to say and do before it finally happened? And this was always the person that he was. It was always abundantly clear. But he had to keep trying, desperately pushing the boundaries to finally get tossed out because the Republicans just refused to see it. They just don't understand what the big hubbub is about.
If he was the president, anyway, he wouldn't have got run out. And by the way, if he said it now, if he's still in Congress now, if he said this right now, he wouldn't get him run out of there. Look, we got Marjorie Taylor
Greene. No, he'd be fine now.
Lauren Boebert. They're not getting run out. He would not be run out.
Yeah, it's like Bill O'Reilly and why am I blanking on the really crazy clown guy? He used to be on Fox News and now is on The Blaze. Oh my god, I'm like Glenn Beck. They got fired from Fox on the one hand for saying something crazy and for the other for sexual harassment. They should have just waited a bit. They would not get fired for those things now, you dummies. You got fired too early. Anyway, I wanted to give some responses to this tweet. Alonzo Duralde, one of my favorite movie reviewers, responded with this. I'm not going to say it out loud, but you can see it. I love that. And it's themed to his work, which is what I appreciate. Master Beef Producer fixed it to just, I spent all day hoeing. See, that would have been a funny tweet. That would have been good. And Michael Starbury, I think, speaks for many of us. But he says, I follow politics and I low-key thought you passed away 2 years ago. Ooh. So your tweet is not only stupid, but it's kind of surprising, which is 100% accurate. Jeez. Yeah, anyway.
What purpose does Steve King have in tweeting this? He's not in Congress.
You could have ended that sentence earlier. What point does Steve King have? What is the point of Steve King? Honestly, like cosmically, what is the point of this person? Anyway, with that said, we do have to get into far more important news. We're gonna give you just a little bit of updates about what's been going on with the January 6th hearings. Of course, I did some live coverage of that. I know JR has as well. So with that, why don't we jump into one of the most embarrassing and ridiculous developments over the past day, starting with this.
Call them up. We called them up. He didn't want it, and we didn't deliver it. But
why,
story.
But why did you even offer it without vetting it?
Exactly. We got handed an envelope that was supposed to go to the vice president. I didn't know. So we called out the vice president. He didn't want it. We didn't deliver it. It's not a story, guys. This is such a non-story.
Are you going to ask?
That is Senator Ron Johnson, who recently came under scrutiny just on Tuesday after the January 6th committee revealed text messages between his chief of staff, Sean Riley, and former Mike Pence assistant Chris Hodgson. Shortly before storming the US Capitol, Riley told Hodgson that the senator, before this storming, he didn't personally do it, that the senator had an alternate slate of electors to personally deliver to Mike Pence, but Hodgson told him, do not give that to the former vice president. So this gets into the idea that the actual electors, which are the only real electors, there's no such thing as alternate electors. They're just random people that the Republicans know would somehow say, no, Trump won the election. Ron Johnson is now implicated in that thanks to his chief of staff. And so he is running from those questions. That right there, saying it's just a non-story, it gets even more embarrassing than that. Take a look at who he tries to pin the blame on for this entire thing.
And who, do you remember who gave it to you?
Have no, it was a staff-to-staff deal. I mean, it apparently had Michigan and Wisconsin. I had no hand in any of it. Again, this lasted a couple minutes in our office, and yeah, the episode is over. Again, this is, guys, this is a total non-story.
Are you going to ask your aides about who this person was? Have you asked?
We did. No, literally, don't. It was a staff-to-staff. Somebody from the House, some staff intern, you know, said we got to, you know, the vice president needs this or whatever. You know, again, I wasn't involved. I don't know what they said, but
you wanna
but somebody from the House delivered to a staff member in my office, my chief of staff, called the vice president, hey, we got this. And the vice president said, don't deliver it. We didn't.
Are you curious about the identity of this person? Are you curious about the identity of this person? Do you want to ask about
it? No, because there's no conspiracy here. This is a complete non-story, guys. Complete non-story. It's a total partisan witch hunt. And, you know, I was not involved in this at all, you know. So I don't know why you're even asking the questions. So why don't you just leave me alone? We have no idea.
But it was your chief of staff who sent this information over.
No. It was my chief of staff that contacted. He just came from the White House. Uh-huh. First day on the job. He called up somebody he knew in the vice president's staff. Hey, we got this. And the vice president said, don't deliver it to us. And we didn't.
I mean, and does he know who he got this from?
The only thing better and less suspicious than one excuse for something is like 1,000. Okay, why are you talking? It was an intern. It was an intern for me or for them. I don't know. Or my chief of staff, or maybe it was their chief of staff, or maybe Mike Pence asked for it, even though it's clear that he wasn't interested in being involved in this. Also, my chief of staff just came. It was his first day. He hadn't even unpacked his bags. The sun was in my eyes. And why are you talking to me? I didn't have anything to do with this. JR, it is very embarrassing to try to pin all of this on some intern, that the intern came up with the scheme to give the alternate electors. But it is more embarrassing to pretend that you're going to throw an intern scapegoat under the bus. But then, like when they say, well, so are you at least going to identify who this person is that is implicating you in a terrible scandal? They're making you look terrible. Obviously, you would want to know who they are. No, I'm not interested in any of that. It's total non-story. Why are you talking to me? Go away. And he tries to walk even faster. That is a US senator right there.
Ron Johnson is generally a powerful politician. He sits on the Department of Homeland Security Committee, and he wants us to believe that there's so many holes in the security system when it comes to packages and deliveries being sent around from interns to your staff members to your chief of staff to even you knowing about it. He wants everyone to believe that he has no part in it. And for people who want to believe that, there's one more question. Why does he have no part in it? What else does he have no part in? Who's running this office? What are these rogue staff members? An intern has access to take some fake slate of electors and hand them to the vice president of the entire United States of America and hope that he flips this election for that particular, those two particular states based off the information of fake electors that he gave to him.
Yeah.
This new intern who just started that day. Wow, man, this is some serious on the job responsibilities that they give to their interns. As soon as they walk in, they can just flip entire elections. This is weird how this works. So, you know what? If nothing else, this guy is super incompetent. If we're going to believe his BS stories, that he has no idea what's happening.
You know, I know that the algorithm doesn't incentivize this, but sometimes I like to leave the most embarrassing part for last. So you just said that he was incompetent. Anybody out there, you want some proof of that? So trying to walk away really fast and coming up with a bunch of excuses, trying to matrix this thing is very embarrassing, but not quite as embarrassing as one other tactic he tried to use to get out of answering questions, which you'll see right here.
The staff was doing with the alternate slates of abductors. No, you're not. I can see your phone. I can see your screen. Does your chief of staff still work for you, Senator?
Can you explain what happened there? Why was your chief of staff even offering this to the vice president?
So that's hilarious that he was trying to pretend to be on the phone. But to be clear, the reporter caught him, but the reporter actually didn't have a super solid case. The reporter said, I can look at your screen, it's not on. That's true, but sometimes the screen will automatically turn off while you're on a call because it's so close to your face, you wouldn't see it anyway. So he could have implied that the reporter was wrong, but he made one crucial mistake. Do you know what it was? Generally, when you end a call, you say something, you fool. He could have just been like, bye, that'd be it. Instead, he just, that's John, not how calls end.
He couldn't do it because obviously he wasn't talking to anyone. But throughout the whole time, even when he said, I'm on a call, he wasn't saying anything. Even if he went to bye, no one was saying anything. This was not a conversation. Were you listening to voice messages? What's going on? But you have to then press a button. None of that happened. The whole time he was walking and they said, I can see your phone. Again, he didn't think, oh, of course, my phone's always dark, because he's in a panic. So he couldn't dispute it. It was a bit of a leap for that reporter to point that out, because again, he could have easily debunked that. But no, he was actually lying. It's pretty obvious. It's hilarious. This guy's a mess.
You know, sometimes you don't want to answer questions or whatever and you need a strategy to get out of it. I think for him, this was a bad call. As like a reporter, I don't want to get like hung up on this story, but no, you need something better than just talk, pretend to talk, come up with something. He is the worst improv performer ever.
Ron Johnson's not a smart guy.
No, when they're sending him, they're not sending their best or their most creative or their wittiest. Anyway. With that said, why don't we move into a little bit more of the substance? We're gonna, to some extent, summarize this week in the hearings. Let's jump into this next video of Neil Cavuto.
You're the lawyer and a great one. I'm not, but this just seems to make Donald Trump look awful, just awful. Your thoughts?
Yeah, Neil, today I thought that the committee focused a lot on linking the former president to this scheme to create the fake electors. And it seems to be a real theme that the committee members are trying to bring out in their statements and their questioning to show that the former president wasn't just a bystander, or that, you know, people who worked for him were trying to do this, but that the president was a central player in all of this. That really seems to be one of the themes that these committee members have been pounding on the last few hearings.
So look, let's be clear. That is Neil Cavuto. That is a Fox host who is admitting that this testimony is damning. And look, now we have to balance the fact that Neil Cavuto is not one of the most influential people at Fox. That is totally true. But also, Fox basically doesn't show, let alone cover, what's going on at these hearings. So having Neil Cavuto at least bring it up, let alone as in as critical a light as that, like he is saying that this is damning, he looks awful, which is totally true for a lot of different reasons. In particular, what they're focusing on there is that he clearly had been trying to get this scheme of the alternate electors cooked up, which is not a thing. You can't do that. It's not legal. But much more importantly, since all of this is supposed to hinge on whether what he thought he was doing was legal or not, whether it was based in truth or not, the testimony has made clear that people that he could have and should have trusted were making clear to him at every step along the way that none of this was legal, none of this made sense, they weren't going to go along with it, and he kept pushing for it too. And that is where it gets into potentially really damning territory for Trump. Now, of course, his fallback defense is that he is a powerful, wealthy, white former president. So that's a pretty good defense against basically anything, JR. But the testimony has been really bad for him, and it's not done yet.
Yeah, there was this one thing, the way even Cavuto said that, and I don't want to nitpick on certain terms. But this is just the way our mindsets go when it comes to something like this with a former president, especially from this party. But he said, does this make Trump look, he said, doesn't this make Trump look awful? Just awful. No, no, the January 6th hearings are not making Trump look awful. They're showing how awful Trump is. It's nothing about making him look that way. Making someone look that way means that you're taking information, you're like applying it to them and making them look a certain way. It's like makeup and you're covering up his reality and making him look bad. No, no, what we're doing is taking the makeup off and showing how bad he was. From every detail, from how they planned and targeted and violently pushed this entire plan across, hopefully what they thought was gonna be the finish line, it's showing how awful they were. It's showing how illegal their actions were. It's showing how much they had no intention of following democracy in the way that we normally do things. It's all about Donald Trump.
100%. And again, like, it's so weird. If you're just coming into this now, that so much of this has to come down to, well, did he know for sure that he couldn't do that? Did he believe in his heart of hearts that he'd actually won against all odds? Like, none of that should matter literally at all. But for some reason, in this very particular case with these particular crimes, even as high as the stakes are, which is so much infinitely higher than the vast majority of all other crimes, that matters. So I want to give just a little bit more from what their back and forth was. So Neil Cavuto went on to say, if you knowingly make statements you know aren't true and they're proven untrue, and yet you still make the statements, which has been demonstrated in this, that he kept doing that, maybe because you're totally and personally convinced you're on the right and they're on the wrong, which could be his psychological defense since he doesn't trust anyone. At what point does that cross a constitutional line and maybe a legal one? And the lawyer that he brought, a former White House lawyer, says it can cross a legal line if you're making those false statements in conjunction with the certification of an election, or you're trying to corrupt the count or things of that nature. He added that it can be shown that Trump, quote, believed or knew or understood that, if it can be shown that he believed or knew or understood that his claims didn't have merit and yet went ahead with this, then he's in real trouble. Well, we are so far past that at this point. Like, he knew that what he was doing was not legitimate. There is no case to be made that that is not the case. The only thing that we need to figure out is, will the DOJ, will Merrick Garland do something? And I have obviously been, I've been, you know, very unsure about that, very pessimistic. Recently, Merrick Garland decided to flee to a different country. He's off in Europe right now. He wants to get as far from this thing as possible. Granted, there's some stuff going on in Ukraine. Anyway, so that worries me a little bit, JR.
Yeah, I'm trying not to be as pessimistic as I have been on this, but I'm super pessimistic on it. The more we see it, the more I'm thinking, oh my God, they can't possibly let this go beyond at least doing something, at least in some form of indictments. They have to suggest these things. But man, again, I'm gonna sit with believe it when I see it. And right now we just have to see what this is. And if it doesn't happen that way, it's gonna be written off easily as, oh yeah, you know, these Democrats did this whole entire January 6th committee hearing, which of course there's two Republicans on board as well. And it was just them trying to win an election, because the follow through on the legal part of it has to be the next step.
Yeah. Does anyone remember, I'm trying to make this easier to understand outside of the context of this complicated stuff about the Constitution and law and all that. Does anyone remember when Ross had a relationship with one of his students and he got fired, even though he believed that it was just frowned upon? It's very clear that he believed that it was just frowned upon. In fact, I have videos of him saying it many times. So why did he still get fired? Sure, he broke the rules, but he thought it was just frowned upon. He didn't think it was illegal. Think about that, like how low the stakes are. You would never get away with anything like this if you just didn't, if you thought it was okay. Doesn't make any sense. Man, our justice system is 180, like it doesn't make any sense. Everything is topsy turvy. Anyway, hold on. Sophie reminds me, it was pretty high stakes because her dad was Bruce Willis. And he could have beat up Ross. That is, I forgot that that's who that character was. Wait, is that who's Bruce Willis' dad? Was it? I thought that was a different student. Anyway.
Are we talking Friends or what's Ross are you talking about?
Yes, I'm talking about Friends. It's the only reference I've ever made to Friends. And then Rachel dated Bruce Willis. We're going too deep into the canon of Friends at this point. Anyway, what is coming on the January 6th hearings? Well, potentially some exciting stuff. We might have to wait a few days. We might have to wait maybe a few weeks, but some exciting stuff is in fact coming. Documentary film director Alex Holder was apparently shooting tons of footage during the former president's failed 2020 campaign. He was with Trump and the family. That footage, which has never seen the light of day, has now been subpoenaed by the January 6th committee. And the Rolling Stone reports, by the way, Nikki McCann Ramirez, who's been on our show a couple times now with the Rolling Stone, doing great reporting there already. So awesome job for her. In some of the highest ranks of the Trump world diaspora, including among just Rolling Stone, including among several who testified before the January 6th committee, news of the documentarian cooperating with the congressional panel came as a bizarre surprise. What the F is this? A former top Trump 2020 official messaged Rolling Stone on Tuesday after seeing it. So that is potentially coming. Now, we also know that after this Thursday, so we're going to get some of the hearing discussion this Thursday. After this, the committee is going to resume its hearings in July. They say they're reassessing their schedule after significant new tranches of evidence have arrived, including documentary footage and new tips as well. So if this person was hanging out with them, filming Trump, and we know all the stuff Trump revealed to like people, like authors who are embedded with him, he's going to be on video in this thing. It is going to be dramatic, delightful news.
It's like it's not going to get much better than this. It's similar to what the documentarian did on the first days of these hearings when he talked about how he was embedded with the Proud Boys and openly showed how they planned and intimately planned how they're going to get into the Capitol and force certain things. And yes, they were the first breach points, and they knew that the rest of MAGA would be right behind them. It was all a plan. Yeah. They spoke on camera. They talked about this dark deal in the middle of a parking garage. It doesn't get more movie-like than this.
Yeah, 100%. Oh God, I hope the footage is good. And I also have to wonder, like, why don't they have it yet? It has been a year and a half. Get this stuff out there. And by the way, one of the reasons I hope that the footage is good is because that's probably all we're gonna get from this. We're not gonna get consequences, so I at least hope we have some good video. Anyway, with that said, we do have to take our first break. We're way over. We'll be back with more news and more discussion of friends after this.
On this vote, the yeas are 223, the nays are 204. The bill is passed. Without objection, a motion to reconsider is laid upon the table.
And there you have it, dramatic video proof of the House technically doing something, passing somewhat bold gun control legislation that will go nowhere. So what would it do? Well, it would, in theory, hypothetically, in some other universe founded in reason and compassion that we don't live in, it would have raised the age limit for buying a semi-automatic rifle and prohibit the sale of ammunition magazines with a capacity of more than 15 rounds. The legislation did pass, as was announced there. Five Republicans voted for the bill, only one of which is seeking re-election. Absolute madness, but it would have been good. And think about how much more difficult it would be for people to commit the sorts of mass acts of violence, including school shootings, with that as law. The bill also includes incentives designed to increase the use of safe gun storage devices, create penalties for violating safe storage requirements, providing for a fine and imprisonment of up to 5 years if a gun is not properly stored and is subsequently used by a minor to injure or kill themselves or some other individual. It also builds on previous executive actions banning fast action bump stock devices, as well as ghost guns that are assembled without serial devices. Every single bit of that is utter indisputable common sense, and it will soon go to the Senate to die. It's never, ever, ever going to go into law. What we might get, though, is what the Senate just advanced. 63-34, it's not done, they haven't voted on it yet, but they will soon, hopefully on Saturday. Their legislation, forget everything that I just said from the House thing, that exists in fantasy land. What this would do, and we will acknowledge that it both sucks and isn't enough and won't stop the mass shootings, but is also simultaneously the most sweeping gun control legislation since Congress passed the assault weapons ban back in 1994, which was later reversed. It provides financial incentives for states to create mental health programs and implement red flag laws, requires expanded background checks, not notably universal background checks for gun buyers under 21, increases penalties for straw purchases of firearms, meaning you buy it to then give to someone else, which if the penalties are not super high, then what's the point of any of this? It closes the so-called boyfriend loophole, prohibiting romantic partners convicted of domestic violence and not married to their victims from getting firearms, notably for 5 years, not for life. The legislation right now does not restrict any rights of existing gun owners, except conceivably an unstated but sort of assumed right that you can beat your partner and then buy a gun. They seem to think that should be a right. That has now been restricted, so boo-hoo for them. It would make it easier to remove guns from people threatening to kill themselves or others, as well as people who've committed domestic violence. Clarifies who needs to register as a federal firearms dealer and cracks down on illegal gun trafficking, as well as providing money for mental health services and community-based anti-violence programs and some other things too. 14 Republicans, so all of that, it barely does anything. And they got 14 Republicans. And that might be the thing that ends up passing. We'll see. Not all that good stuff in the House bill that was passed, mostly for show. I mean, it's not gonna happen, JR. We might get this.
This is what we're looking at. Again, it goes up to the upper chamber, as they call it, and the Senate has to be the ones to determine whether or not they're gonna do anything about it. What's the point of these House bills? Actually, the use of these House bills is for them to say how radical the House is and actually wanting 21-year-olds to have the minimum age for buying a firearm. Or actually, no, they did go these red flag laws, which again, we'll see, you know, because this is what they're saying they're looking to do. And then you see John Cornyn go to the Texas Republican convention over the weekend and get booed, and half the crowd is screaming, no red flag laws. Maybe they should ask them, which people do you think are going to be affected by these red flag laws? You? Because they keep calling yourselves legal gun owners, legal responsible gun owners. Weird how that works, because apparently you beat on your spouse and you want to buy a gun right afterwards. Apparently you show signs of wanting to shoot up a school or a bank or a stadium, and then you want to get your gun. Are these the people that you want to support? Because they just say these things, blanket statements, as if everyone who has a gun is a law-abiding gun owner. Yeah. In fact, many of them who are turn into non-law-abiding gun owners as soon as they start shooting up this Buffalo grocery store or this school. They were, yep. And also the hospital out in Tulsa, I believe. Those were law-abiding gun owners. But we're okay with that.
100%. By the way, really fast, I'm gonna read a couple more graphs. Before I do it though, I'm gonna read a few names, and this is a game for the chat. There is a name that is on this list. There is a name that is not on this list. Let's see if you can identify them. These are the yeses coming from Republican senators: Blunt, Burr, Capito, Cassidy, Collins, Cornyn, Ernst, Graham. Hey, Graham. McConnell. That's interesting. Murkowski, Portman, Romney, Tillis, Young. Toomey was absent, but a likely yes. There's a name that's on there. There's a name that's not on there. We're gonna proceed, and I'll go back to that in a second. Really fast. The House Judiciary GOP, just to give you an idea of where they stand, said no gun bill, no amnesty. Period. It's the only time they're comfortable with periods, by the way, on the Republican side. No gun bill. Not like no bans or nothing. Nothing. Like, if you just beat the hell out of your partner, hand that person an AR-15. If you're 14 and you want a cannon, no, you can't do anything to stop that. That's who the Republican Party is. And now let's return to our little game, because interestingly, Texas, so you mentioned Buffalo, JR. Well, obviously the senators of New York are gonna support gun control legislation. But Texas just was the site of this absolutely horrendous historic mass shooting. Kids blown apart by weapons that nobody should own, let alone an 18-year-old. John Cornyn voted in favor of this bill, which, by the way, it's debatable whether that could have stopped this shooting. I don't know that it would have. But he at least is supporting it, and he's being attacked on the right for that. Ted Cruz, nada. His name is not on the list because he doesn't care at all. Again, I'm not saying, I'm disappointed and shocked that Ted Cruz didn't support banning assault weapons. This is the most minor, shallow, surface level gun control legislation imaginable. It is a national, it's a world embarrassment that this can count as the strongest bill that's passed since the early 90s. And even that, you couldn't get him to support. When they tell you that American politics has become more radical, this is what that is. They will pretend that, there's crazy on all sides. No, there is no equivalent in any topic area, any actual person on the left, to the right's unwillingness to stop kids from being blown limb from limb. And it's just expected. It's barely worth even mentioning. We just so understand how radical they are and how little they'll actually do. And I know that there are people that are excited about this. I get it. Fred Guttenberg has been on our show multiple times. He's been working ever since the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas, where he lost his daughter, Jamie, to get gun control. He's happy about this and he cares about this issue. So that is worth something. And so I guess to some extent, assuming it passes, I was wrong when I said nothing would happen. I should have amended it to, like, I guess the best that we can possibly hope for that's still really bad, that might happen.
Yeah, it's gotten to the point where people then have to try and hope for scraps, as you were talking about. They have to be happy for the scraps and the little bit that there is. Remember they got mad at Nancy Pelosi for saying that, you know, what they're trying to give people economically is scraps. Like, how dare she say that we're giving Americans scraps? It's, you have to compare it to what they're actually doing, because they're getting all these NRA donations. They want to do nothing, as you point out, Ted Cruz has no interest in doing anything about this specifically for political purposes. Now, every time he speaks, every time he wants to talk about anything he's trying to do with initiatives, why he should get reelected, they should ask him, hey, those 19 children, the family and friends of those 19 children, the two adults that were murdered in Uvalde in that school, what do you have to say to them and why you care nothing about their lives and not happening to the next group of families? Talk to them specifically, name their names and say, Ted Cruz, what do you have to say to the parents of these children? Because obviously you agree with what the House Judiciary Republicans said, which was no gun bill. That means F you, F your kids, I'm glad they're dead. That's what it means. Let's keep it real. Make him answer those questions. Is he just flying under the radar right now with, oh, just this no vote, has no part of it, and just moves on with his life and acts like he's actually a politician that represents his people? He's from Texas. He should be asked every time he even sticks his face in front of a microphone. So tired of this guy.
You're 100% right. And I'll close by saying, when we call, as we will, you know, for hundreds of times until he's finally driven from politics, we're gonna call Ted Cruz a coward. I mean, understand simultaneously, there are many reasons that we call him a coward. So when we point out that he was a coward in regards to standing up to Donald Trump and debasing himself after the guy called his wife ugly and said that his father was a presidential assassin, all that, that is cowardice. This is so much worse though. And this might not be as funny, but it's way more pathetic. It's way higher stakes stuff. So just try to remember that. With that said, we are gonna take a break. When we come back, we got a lot more to talk about, so don't go anywhere. Okay, let's do it. Let's jump into the unfortunate news. We have some regrettable news. The recount that was requested by Jessica Cisneros in her primary challenge against Democrat, technically Henry Cuellar, has turned out to not have reversed the results. And Henry Cuellar will be the nominee for that district. The final vote looks like it was 50.3% to 49.7%. It was so incredibly close. I mean, you know, 2 years ago, it was very close. It was even closer this time. Almost anything being different would have shifted it. But no, instead of getting Jessica Cisneros, who could have been an awesome representative, we're stuck with one of the worst Democrats in the country. And Jessica Cisneros is taking the high road with her commentary about this, tweeting the results of the Texas 28 runoff are not what we had fought for. I am so grateful for the leap of faith so many of you took on this underdog race. I look forward to keep fighting for a more progressive and accountable Democratic Party and work to turn Texas blue in November. We always knew this was an uphill battle. We were up against a corrupt political machine, Republican funded super PACs, big oil, the Chamber of Commerce, dark money groups, big pharma, and nearly the entire Democratic Party establishment. And we still refuse to back down. With this close of a margin, it's clear that without their aggressive interference in the lives of South Texas families, we would have won. The biggest thing holding us back from pursuing the change we deserve is their fear of change, fear of the future. The only way you defeat fear is with courage and determination that in the richest nation in the world, we all deserve to thrive. Change is a process, and through this process, we're educating our community that we deserve better than the status quo. So yeah, she identified some of the things that influenced it. I don't know if it was the absolutely disgusting, completely thoroughly unacceptable billboards that he totally wasn't involved in that went up in the district. I don't know if it was Nancy Pelosi and other members of sort of senior Democratic leadership that decided that it was unacceptable to let the voters just decide to potentially have someone who actually represents the future of the Democratic Party. Instead, we need to have a guy who in any other state would be among the more conservative Republicans. We literally need a guy who doesn't want gun control and doesn't believe that reproductive rights should be up to the people exercising them. And so they took their political capital and time in a time of endless crises in America to go and work to get Henry Cuellar to keep his seat. It was an absolutely disgusting thing that Nancy Pelosi and other Democrats, including Jim Clyburn, chose to do, JR. And in the end, it seems like that was probably the deciding factor.
Yeah, I was going to say, as you listed some of the potential reasons, or I guess the factors that went into this, I think the big part of it, of course, was the establishment of the party, making sure that they put all their money and effort and energy behind Henry Cuellar. Again, you pointed out some of his issues. I was going to point those out too, the reproductive rights, openly about that. And not really much as far as trying to explain those away, especially as we've seen what's going to potentially happen with the Supreme Court and their draft decision there on Roe and gun control. Hey, listen, the entire party, the Democratic Party, can't go around. It's going to look this way, not because I think so, but the crying and the whining about what's going on with our gun situation, and then back someone who has the exact opposite belief system that you're whining and crying about. Then we can say you're just whining and crying because there's nothing behind your emotion. There's nothing behind your principles that you say you have as far as changing that. How do you change something that already have, we have an entire party that posts things like no gun bill and chants and boos down one of their major leaders for having some support behind red flag laws? You're fighting that party, yet you still include someone like Henry Cuellar, who is a part of that party and those stances. No one can take you seriously. The people that voted for you will probably wonder, so what do they believe? Because we just lost children again, and they're continuing backing people like this. What's it based off of? Based off of fear, and it's based off of just really not believing in what they're saying.
100%. Yeah, well, it is exactly that. This is not only, you know, a super conservative like guy on these major issues, but specifically in Texas, following these shootings, following Texas, being at the forefront of criminalizing abortion and trying to support your reproductive rights, they could have just not weighed in. They could have just let people choose. They would not do that. They did not find that to be acceptable. They had to have Trump's favorite Democrat. That's who they had to have at this time. As if they needed the opportunity to make sure that people knew that all of what they were saying about reproductive rights, about guns, all that is BS. They don't actually mean it. They're not interested in making sure that they have the majority necessary, robust, big enough, strong enough, passionate, and committed enough to get actual strong legislation passed. It's not actually about that. They like their income. That's
and when the, and when these establishment Democrats lose, they will blame people like Jessica Cisneros. When they lose.
With that, we're going to. I know. Anyway, that said, we're going to jump into a different story. A little bit depressing, too. We have some positive news coming, right? We're going to talk about mac and cheese more later. So, anyway, let's jump into this. The hits from the Supreme Court just keep on coming. That whole like separation of church and state thing, that was quaint for a bit. They tolerated it, sort of, never liked it, and now they're continuing to blast big holes in it. It's not about chipping away at it anymore. They're doing far more than that. So, and this is even before the Roe v. Wade thing. We're gonna get to that in a month or so. The US Supreme Court just yesterday ruled that Maine must include religious schools in a state tuition program that sends tax dollars to aid private schools. The case is Carson versus Macon, concerns a program that requires districts without public secondary schools to either educate children by partnering with neighboring public schools or pay for tuition at a private school of the parents' choosing. Until Tuesdays, parents could not opt to send their children to religious institutions. For, let's sort of guess the reason for that was so that your taxpayer dollars weren't directly subsidizing a religion that you might not agree with. I think that might be the reason. Well, no. Now, that is not only what can happen. That is, now that that has been allowed, all over the country, they're going to be racing to make sure that that happens. As much money as possible goes into funding those schools. Anything to help defund actual secular public education. That's what they're going to do. Now, hypothetically, if it can go to religious schools, it could go to any sort of religious schools. It could be secondary Hindu schools or Muslim schools, or well, I'm not even gonna waste your time by pretending that that is a thing that's going to happen, because that is not going to happen. They would never allow it. This isn't about religious freedom. This is about placing Christianity atop literally everything else. Maybe neck and neck with the idea of whiteness, But those two things basically, JR, are what they're excited about. That's what they're fighting for.
Again, it's one of those things that gets pushed all the time when they talk about school funding and let's get rid of the Department of Education and how about school choice. Like, all these are different angles towards them sucking more of the actual potential power out of our school system that we already neglect to outstanding degrees already. So again, but then it's based in specific kind of religious schools. I would love to see this start to get used in other religions in their schools and really see what they have to say. Because obviously it's a bit of an interchangeable word when it comes to conservatives in the country, when they talk about, hey, religious freedom. What they mean is Christianity dominating religion is what they're trying to say. Because Christianity in this country has always been fought against. It's always been on the back burner. No one ever talks about it. There's no power structure around it. They don't skirt any tax laws. None of those things really happen with Christianity in this country, but in reality it does. But as long as they keep this narrative going that they're this oppressive, depressed group, and that we need to redirect some more money so we can have more Christian belief systems. And what happens in some of these Christian schools is they teach anti-LGBTQ belief systems, also sending people off for some kind of reform therapy because they're not real humans if they don't have the same thought processes or attraction to people that they deem necessary. This is what it's going to help fund. It's another roundabout way to push the same belief system that the majority of Americans just don't believe in.
Yeah, no, 100%. And you said that sometimes that's what is in this case. So in this particular case, the plaintiffs sought taxpayer dollars to send their children to two Christian schools that integrate religion in their classrooms. And what do you know, maintain policies against gay and transgender students and staff. The two schools describe themselves as seeking to instill a biblical worldview in students, well, their own particular dogmatic idea of what that worldview should be, that doesn't actually comport with anything in the Bible, but they find it convenient to say that it does. They refuse to hire gay teachers or admit gay and transgender students. Bangor Christian Schools teaches that a husband is the leader of the household and includes a class in which students learn to refute the teachings of the Islamic religion with the truth of God's word. So it is not only going to a school that has Christianity, it is blocking whose salary can be paid with that. You can't be gay or transgender. Also, it is aggressive against other religions. That is what, if you live in Maine, you're going to be subsidizing, and God only knows what other states are going to be doing soon. That's what they're going to be doing. I mean, it's absolute madness, obviously. That's what they're like. Amy Coney Barrett, they didn't choose her like for her rigorous secular understanding of the Constitution and laws. That's not what they chose these people for. They chose them for this. Like, are we becoming a fascist state? Yes. Is white supremacy at the core of it? Yes. But Christian nationalism, Christian supremacy is a big part of it too.
It's crazy that one line, refute the teachings of the Islamic religion with the truth of God's word. Flip that and act like an Islamic school was teaching the opposite. Refute the teachings of Christianity with the truth of Islam and Allah's word.
Yeah. How do you think they'd be okay with that?
Oh.
Does anybody think that they'd be okay with that? If I set up, you know what I'm gonna do? I'm setting up as realistic as I can of a Hogwarts. Yeah, I want money. I got Hogwarts. I'm setting it up. I want your money. I want your taxpayer dollars. I have a story that will inform my lessons too. Can you do that? No. No, this entire thing is absolute madness.
Let's try.
It's absolute madness. Look, if you wanna have your religion, have your goddamn religion. It's not supposed to be publicly funded. There has barely been a separation of church and state. It's mostly been a thing of norms. And as we know, norms are worth nothing. But now it is directly funding. And they don't pay taxes. So it's not even a two-way road of money. Nope. It is literally just their parasite on the state. That's what it is.
And maybe the rest of the craziness that's happened allows those lines to be blurred without us knowing what's really happening. My last thought.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe people won't pay as much attention to this.
Absolutely.
Well, anyway, if you're watching on our linear platforms or on the podcast, thank you so much for watching. But if you're on Twitch or YouTube, Members App, and a bunch of other stuff, we've got a lot more programming for you. So don't go anywhere. When we come back, we're talking about this absolute madness of a Juneteenth sign after this. Gabby says, Trump's defense at this point can only amount to the universe's most extreme case of affluenza. He's been grifting and lying his entire life and has never been held accountable for anything. So why should he change that behavior as president? That is 100% accurate. Totally true. He could make the case better than anyone that he would never believe that anything he's doing would hurt him, because it never has. I Am Sock says, more like Big Nerds Wednesday. Ouch. Anyway, Strategic Diversity Dragon says Big Candy Wednesday. I do like that. Yeah, we're getting heckled on our show. By the way, Emma and Anna had some sort of fight over who is the bigger nerd, and they threw me under the bus, but I don't know what it was originally about. If someone could fill me in the chat, I would appreciate that. Armed Liberal says, sorry, continuing rant from yesterday. If cops can't open a door, just like Straight out of Compton, they will take out a wall. The chief needs to be fired. 100%. Yeah.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.